Now would you like to have your Bibles open at the book of Ecclesiastes? I'm going to read the first chapter and just read into the second chapter, and then I'll read the last few verses, as I did last week, in the New English Translation of the Bible, which is proving so helpful to us. So Ecclesiastes chapter 1, the words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again, what has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study, to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, look, I have increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom, and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? So I'm now reading, I think I'll just read from the 16th verse of chapter 1 to where I've just finished. In chapter 2, and this is in the New English Translation of the Bible, which I think most of you have said it has been very helpful. It reads like this from the 16th verse of chapter 1. I thought to myself, I have become much wiser than any of my predecessors who ruled over Jerusalem. I have acquired much wisdom and knowledge. So I decided to discern the benefit of wisdom and knowledge over foolish behaviour and ideas. However, I concluded that even this endeavour is like trying to chase the wind. For with great wisdom comes great frustration. Whoever increases his knowledge merely increases his heartache. I thought to myself, come now, I will try self-indulgent pleasure to see if it is worthwhile. But I found that it also is futile. I said of partying, it is folly. And of self-indulgent pleasure, it accomplishes nothing. So week by week we are going through this remarkable book of Ecclesiastes, and the name of the one who instructs us when translated is pronounced Koheleth. So here is Koheleth, the teacher, the preacher, the philosopher, the professor, if you like. All of these might be used accurately in translation to describe the one who is instructing us. We are, as it were, sat in his lecture theatre and we are listening. We are listening to his wisdom that he brings to us. And we know that he is on God's errand. God, as it were, has put him in the shoes of the secularist, of the humanist. The secularist or the humanist is the one who only looks at observable things. There is nothing to this world other than what can be observed. And you live amongst and work amongst almost everyone today who is a secularist, a humanist. There's nothing to life except what can be observed. No God, no heaven, no Jesus Christ, no hell, no judgment, no life to come. There is only what we are looking at. That is all we have got. And we better get used to it. And so Koheleth says, where does such a thinking lead us to? And God says, go and wear his garments, wear his clothes for a time. Test it. See where his paths lead to. See where secularism and humanism actually bring you to. What does it do to mankind? And already we have seen his use of analogies. How he concludes that life is futile, life is meaningless, lived under the sun. When he says under the sun, he means viewed only with observable things. And of course, he concludes that when life is so, to quote the Net Bible, so monotonous, the aching heart desperately longs for something new. New! Give me something new! Give me something new to hear. The aching heart needs to fix upon something in all of the monotony of life. And it is like a get-out-of-jail card. It is, as people say, life is like a prison to me. Give me something new to cope with life itself. Just something to break the sameness of this meaningless, futile existence. But he says there's no point looking for new things because what has been will be again and has been before. There's really nothing new under the sun. People have always travelled. They will go on travelling. They always have invented. They will go on inventing. We get up in the morning, we get dressed. We go to bed, we get up in the morning, we get dressed. We get up in the morning, we get dressed. We go to work. It all goes round. He even draws the picture from nature. He says the sun goes up, the sun goes down, the sun goes up, the sun goes down. The streams go to the sea, they don't fill it, they come back again. Even nature tells you of the sheer monotony of life. And God, as it were, has presented to all of us the reality. You're always going to have to get up and get dressed. You're always going to have to go and make your food. And I said the other week, iron the clothes and wash them and I don't know what else. The monotony of life, it cannot be escaped. We get sick, we recover, we get sick, we recover, we die. This is the reality of life. And Koheleth says there is a futility. You can look all you like, he says, and you can listen all you like, but it won't matter at all because everything will ultimately be the same. There's nothing new under the sun in this observable, humanistic, secularist way of living life with the 60 or 70 or 80 years of life which life will give you. Well then, of course, I said last week in verse 12 of chapter 1, he leaves analogies behind, and then what he does is he draws our attention to his experience and he sharpens the focus, so to speak, and he goes and he begins to explore, to apply his mind, to study. And he rationalizes things out and he says, well, the amount of things in the world to learn are just so big, surely that they will have the answers to give to me. And he studied and he studied and he studied. And he concluded that God has laid a heavy burden upon mankind. And each and every one of us can say this. Don't you realize that there's a heavy burden for someone who's rich, just as there is a heavy burden for someone who is poor? Someone might say to you, oh, it's burdensome living in a small house. Have you ever said that? Must have done. Or in a small flat, it's burdensome. I've got a relatively big house. It's burdensome. Why? Because I've got more windows to clean and more gutters to sort out and a bigger lawn to cut. You say, oh, well, I'd love to have a lawn like that. Rake the leaves up then in the autumn and see how you like it then. Life is a burden. And if we chase after the sense in all of this, the writer says, Koheleth, the philosopher, the teacher, he says it's like chasing after the wind. In fact, the real translation is it's like trying to eat the wind, as if such a thing were possible. And then he says the crooked can't be straightened. It was a wonderful thought last week. What's missing can't be supplied. If something's bent and crooked, it can't be made straight. It will just go on being the same forever. And to this end, I've said this before and I just say it again. Tenderness and compassion and patience and love and mercy, please, towards those in this life who turn to drink and to drugs as an escapism to get themselves out of the meaningless, monotonous, endless life with nothing except observable things. God has laid a heavy burden, and immediately I'm bound to say to all of you that if Koheleth teaches us and says God has laid a heavy burden, then he's the only one who can lift it. And he will lift it. And he does lift it by his grace and by his love in Christ in the gospel. But for Koheleth at the moment, looking as he does at all observable things from the point of view of the secularist, he says, is there an answer? And that's what we are finding out. Now let's pick up things in the 16th verse and let's look at them together. He's still telling us about his pursuit of education. Wisdom, knowledge. In the 17th verse, if you look at it, I'll remind you of what it says in the New English Translation. So I decided to discern the benefit of wisdom and knowledge over foolish behaviour and ideas. I decided to discern the benefit. Now, listen carefully. He's saying, what accrues to me? What actually accrues to me? What benefit do I get by following one way as against another? Now in chapter 2, he definitely says, I don't want the young people to get the wrong idea, he definitely says that if you were to choose between wisdom and folly, between wisdom and madness, of course you'd choose wisdom. But can wisdom answer the misgivings of life? Can all of the study, can all of the learning, could it answer the misgivings of life? Because wisdom is not just about having the tools to do jobs. Wisdom is about also obtaining an understanding of truth. And that's why it's important for us to think like Koheleth does. He's a philosopher. It's not just about saying, I'll be educated, so I've got the tools to do this. But an education brings you huge questions about what is life about. Wisdom is concerned with truth. Of course it is. There isn't one philosopher who's ever existed. When the Apostle Paul dealt with the Athenians in Acts 17, what was he dealing with except the question of truth? Being educated is not just about saying, I'll be able to solve that problem and that problem. It's about acquiring an understanding of truth. Just let me give you an illustration of this. The 18th verse, you read it for yourself. With much wisdom comes much sorrow. Oh, this isn't about tools. This is about a discovery of truth. He has discovered truth. With the wisdom that he sought, he found that sorrow came with it. Of course it does. I'll give you an illustration. Moffat translates it, the more you understand, the more you ache. It's brilliant. The more you understand, the more you ache. Last year, a good friend of mine contracted cancer. He had the same cancer that I had. And I went off on my trips to see different people to see if I could find out and understand what I needed to know about it. So I could make an informed judgment. The NHS were very good to me. They only give me a very limited amount of time. I could understand that. So I went to see various other people to see if I could get a bit more understanding. When I'd done all of the legwork, I rang my friend who had exactly the same condition that I had. And I said to him, would you like to know what I've found out? And he said, no, I don't want to hear about it. I said, well, I'm not wanting to charge you. I don't want to share the bill, trip to London or whatever. I just like to pass it on to you. No, I don't want to know. Don't talk to me about it. And then I rang him a couple more times. And he said, please don't ring me again, Andrew. I don't want to talk to you about it. He preferred to remain completely ignorant. And he said to me, just leave me alone. The more you understand, the more you ache. And that is true. As I sought to find out the truth, not just the tools of being educated regarding my condition, the more my heart ached. Of course, that's a reality. And you hear about these people, and perhaps you're one of them. You become sick and you immediately go to the doctor on the internet and find out what the internet doctor has to tell you. And I heard a celebrity speaking recently, and he told a story of how he was holed up in a fantastic hotel in New York, and he became sick and he just did not know what to do, so he decided to consult the internet doctor. And he said that he tapped everything in. Is this your condition? Is that relevant to you? Is that? And when he'd finished, he said, it told me basically I would be dead within 6 hours. The more knowledge, the more heartache. The more you understand, the more you ache. And I just would like to say to all of you this morning at this point, it is exactly the truth with the gospel. People say, don't talk to me about the gospel. God, don't peer into my life. Don't tell me the things which are wrong with me. Don't tell me what's up. I don't want the truth. I don't want to face up to the facts. They're too painful. And of course, when God gets to grips with us, he touches upon what's wrong with us. He touches upon our sinfulness. And the knowledge of God's views and the wisdom of God's analysis brings such grief to the soul that we say, please don't come any more with your message. And people will say to you at work, don't say anything more to me about the gospel. I don't want to know any more. Don't tell me any more about my sins. Don't tell me any more about your God. And yet all along, God provides the solution, and yet we choose the route of the humanist, of the secularist. Without God, in this regard, all of our knowledge will just give us deeper aching hearts. Now, someone here will say this, you're forgetting that wisdom, education, and I'm not knocking education, you know that, education is wonderful. But education and knowledge bring success, you're forgetting that. And success brings happiness. Well, actually, if you talk to thousands of university students today who've had their education and paid their enormous bill and now can't get a job, they might disagree with you. There might be thousands of university students today who say it's not provided me with a salary at all. But others will say, well, actually, my learning, my knowledge, my understanding has given me a salary. And it's given me the house that I've got and the car that I've got and the better life that I've got. I've pursued knowledge instead of madness, and look how it has benefited me. I've enjoyed the fulfillment of this, that and the next thing. But Koheleth's point is this. It doesn't ultimately answer the issues of life. The man and woman with the greatest and the best education, she still gets breast cancer. The children die young. You lose your job. Everything goes wrong. Divorce. The breakup of marriage. Homes lost. Possessions gone. What did all my education give me when this happens? And Koheleth is saying this. Pin all of your hopes of the meaning of life upon the pursuit of knowledge and education, of gaining wisdom. And it's likely that still you will find yourself in the same place as everyone else. And so the philosopher says, you might as well chase after the wind. Now, if you look at the beginning of chapter 2, where it goes on from here, which is very remarkable, I think, you can see, as you read the beginning of chapter 2, that Koheleth is not put off. I say, well, you might have quit using your mind. No, Koheleth is not put off. Okay, wisdom and the pursuit of knowledge, that threw up a whole load of grief, dark clouds. It was a doer view of things when he analyzed it all. And so the man of wisdom, you can see in chapter 2, becomes the man of pleasure. And all of the gloom of the knowledge that he had, the grey skies are now going to turn. And he's going to have the blue skies. Look at verse 3. He's still using his mind. He's not abandoned his mind. His mind is guiding him. He's going to throw himself into pleasure, into hedonism. And surely pleasure and hedonism will answer the meaning of life for him. And I just point this out to you at this moment. You've got to really admire Koheleth. I really do when I read it like this. You've got to respect him. He's a living experiment. Of course he is. He's the guinea pig. He's the one who says, I'll put myself forward and have the injections and test the drugs on me. He throws himself entirely into this. You can see it. He's going to test pleasure. And he's going to see if pleasure can actually answer him. And look how far he goes with the experiment. Look at verse 10 of the second chapter. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. You cannot tell me that he has not tested it. He has tested it completely. And the NET Bible says, I will try self-indulgent pleasure. My point is this. At this moment, it is that man's findings have to be respected when they are tested like this. And therefore, anybody who's in doubt of Koheleth, don't doubt him. He's testing it. He's testing it to the nth degree. He's going to test his soul to see if the pleasure of hedonism can actually deeply satisfy him. Do you remember in chapter 1? I said that the eye never has enough of seeing. The ear never has enough of hearing. And in verse 3 of chapter 2 he says, I wanted to see what was good for people. He means good with regard to pleasure. What is good for people with regard to pleasure? What does pleasure accomplish? Is his thought. What does pleasure accomplish? And of course then he connects it to laughter. And some of you might be thinking, well, it can't be wrong to laugh. Of course not. I don't think that for a moment. He's not attacking laughter, because I think that laughter can be very good for us. But the NET Bible has got it bang on. The NET Bible says the laughter is to do with partying, having a good time, merrymaking. And that's what he's got in view. There's no doubt about that. And it's like this. The party is the painkiller. Of course it is. The partygoer drowns the hard facts of life out for a night. In the sea of frivolity, I can lose myself. I can forget about my troubles. That's why people need a Friday night out. Of course it is. When I was a teenager, boys and girls, listen to this. When I was a teenager, I was an unbeliever. I always went to the White Hart in Denbighdale. Always. I went there with my pals, and that's where I drank. And that's where there was all the backslapping and all the banter and all the same old jokes and all the drinking and all the loud music. I couldn't wait for it to get down to partying to end the monotony of what Koheleth speaks about. Drive out the monotony. And people would say, this is before mobile phones or even phones in houses. I had no phone in my house, but my pals would just call by and say, are you going up to White Hart? Yes. And that's where we all went. The hard facts of life disappear for a few hours in the right company, where everybody laughs at the same old jokes and everybody talks the same way And Koheleth says, what does it accomplish? It must accomplish something. The NET Bible says this, self-indulgent pleasure, it accomplishes nothing. Nothing. And that, because I was a living experiment, I can prove it for myself. I did prove it for myself. I'll tell you why. Because life is so complex. Life is so profound. And the questions which we have are not dealt with a night of backslapping on Friday night. Superficial pleasure, the game, the party, the frivolity will never answer the deepest questions of life itself. Why? Because Monday comes round. Monday comes around. And our soul satisfaction needs much more than a Friday night down at the pub or an evening out with the girls. Monday just always comes round. I'm not making a big issue of this, but I draw it to your attention that it is not recorded anywhere in the Gospels or in the New Testament that Jesus laughed. And you said to me, do you think that Jesus laughed? Of course I believe that Jesus laughed. Of course I do. He was a human being like us. Of course I expect that he laughed. But it's not recorded because actually he was concentrating on tears and pain and suffering. And a cry is often better than a laugh. That's the truth. And maybe because pain and suffering and inequality and hurt are here to stay. These are the things which really life is often about. Will laughter help to bury? Will partying help to bury the reality which each and every one of us have to face? We know the answer is no. Will they deal with the hurt and the injustice and the crime and the superficiality? I don't think so. And that's why it's always painful to meet folk who are trying to paper over the cracks when stuff is seriously wrong, instead of facing up to them and dealing with them. All the joking and all the backslapping and all the drinking and all the partying, at the end, it will just be empty glasses and an empty occasion, and life will have to be faced all over again when the music has died down and the event is finished. Isn't it true that by nature, the darkness and the hollowness of life which we experience, we are all yearning, as St. Augustine said, to find an answer to that hollowness and that darkness within. The drug of any kind is an escape to try to free me from the reality which I'm having to face, and that reality won't go away. Ask yourself this morning, is life monotonous? What can be done about it? Is life painful? What is my experience? Is it one of a life of sin and failure? Then God knows about it. And Christ is the only one who can make sense of it. What's extraordinary about listening to Koheleth is he knows, and most of us know, that no matter how many times we have failed in our pursuit of the things in this world, of observable things, to satisfy our deepest heart needs, we will continue to go back to them and try them again and again and again. The thing that's missing is substance. And that thing, of course, is God himself. Can you see a purpose in life? We're going to have to live it. You're going to have to live it. The question is, how will you live it? You say, the burden is too big. God has put too heavy a burden on me. Listen carefully, I'm coming to the end. He can lift it. Jesus said, come to me. Let me bear your burden.
Let me deal with it.
All who are burdened and heavy laden should go to Christ, and he would give them rest. Our sin, of course, you must know this, makes us explorers, but explorers of every solution. Under the sun, every solution. Except God in Christ. Friends, God stands ready to put the meaning in. He's the only one who can. And that's when Mondays look different. Some of you are too young to know this, but one or two of you, maybe Anne, myself, Henneke and Carol, maybe Liam, can recall an American singing group or a couple, brother and sister act, the Carpenters, in the 1970s. And they sang a song, and when Henneke pulled me the words up this morning, some of them, you'd have thought that Koheleth had written them. And one of the refrains in one of the songs just says this: rainy days and Mondays always get me down. Rainy days and Mondays always get me down. But what if Monday is the Lord's day? Now, this is just for me. I'm not forcing it on any of you. For me, today is the Lord's day, and tomorrow is the Lord's day, and the day after is the Lord's day. If it's not his day, I'd like to know whose day it is. And in a meaningless world of futility, where Monday is the Lord's day, when it belongs to him, then it will be filled with purpose and reason and meaning, and the things that fall out wrong, God will bring them to great good. He will show his hand in the day, and life will take on an entirely different perspective. Monday will have pain, and Tuesday, and it will have its monotony and everything else. But if our faith is truly in God, in his Son, then the darkest places can be illuminated by his wonderful presence, and the week takes on a different meaning. People say, I'm not looking forward to Monday. Monday is the Lord's day. Look forward to it. Look forward to it with him. But of course, if he is absent from it, if he cannot be found in it, then all you have is the observable world, the world of the secularist, the world of the humanist. As we approach another week, is God working his purposes out as year succeeds to year? I believe that he is. And that means that the rainy days and the Mondays can be dealt with, and they won't get us down. If God is in charge of his world, if God is in Monday, if he is in my life, if he is joined to my existence, and I am not alone just with this observable world, but with his kindness and his grace and his love and his felt and known presence in my life, what a difference to view life through the eyes of Koheleth, looking at the secularist and the humanist, or viewing it through the eyes of a child of faith. Well, we're going to continue in the weeks to come and listen to what he has to say. But if this morning you see something of yourself and the emptiness and your pursuit of pleasure as if it might be the answer to your life, then listen to Koheleth. He is the master teacher, the master preacher, the philosopher. And I think that we will all do well to sit in his lecture theatre and listen to his voice. Well, God has commissioned him. So let us take it as it really is. Not the word of men, but the word of God. And God bless his word to us this morning. Amen.